love Texas. Anyways, I just want to welcome you to Genesis Metro this morning. I'm Lucas Ashley. I'm the student pastor here at GM, and I am truly honored and excited to get a chance to talk with you this morning. Every Wednesday, we sit down and we talk with our students, and a lot of our students are your kids, and so we've gotten to meet and know a lot of you, which has been an honor. But if we don't know you, or if you don't know a lot about what we do for student ministry, but want to know what our needs are, how you may be able to help, feel free to always come talk to us. God's been doing some incredible things in our ministry, and it is truly not because of me. I get uglier and balder. I don't get better, okay? I'm more like milk. I spoil. But it's because our leaders and our students are just passionate. And they're devoted to trying to change the world for the sake of the kingdom. And so God's been doing some incredible things. And so always feel free to come and talk to us about that. I'm going to get a shameless plug every service because I can. And I don't care. It's truly been fun. So this morning, though, I want to take some time. I want to talk to you about the holidays. That's right, the holidays. Because whether you like it or not, the countdown has begun, right? We have, count them, 4 days. That's 4 days till Thanksgiving. That's 4 days to clean your house. It's 4 days to buy your turkey and try to get it thawed in time so you don't explode it in the oven or in the backyard, right? And then even beyond that, we have 32 days until Christmas. That's 32 days to rack up as much debt as possible. But the holidays are here. And let's be honest. Can we be honest? Is anybody else tired yet? I'm already tired. I love the holidays, but I am already tired. Because I love everything about them. Because for me, it's like the best of everything I enjoy. See, I'm one of those crazy people that I like my family, right? And so for the holidays, I get this best excuse to just lock up and just spend time with my family. Now, like many of you, I love food. And so for the holidays, I have the best excuse to eat more than I normally should. And it's that 1 or 2 days a year that I won't get that look from my wife that says, "Do you really want to eat the rest of that?" Yes, I do. I don't want one more piece. I want the rest of the pie. Just give me the pan, you know? And I don't feel that much shame about it. I love to shop. We are a shopping family. When we were young and had money, that's what we did. Now we just watch people shop, right? But it's the best excuse for that. I love to play football. I love to watch football. And because of Turkey Bowl, I get to do both on Thanksgiving. And then because of the beauty of technology, I can DVR and not miss any of the parades. You laugh. I love the parades. You can judge me if you want. Don't worry. God is our judge, okay? But I love the parades. I love the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. I love the Disney Christmas Parade. I enjoy watching those. So for me, all these things combined on 2 days, cha-ching, is a jackpot for Luke, okay? And I get excited about these things. And for us, about 5, 6 years ago, we started hosting a lot of the holidays at our house. So when the holidays come around, we start to think a lot about our dining table. I know that sounds crazy, but just think about it. Because when the holidays come around, no matter what your table is used for the rest of the year, over those couple days a year, it is arguably becomes the most important piece of furniture in your house, right? Because in those 2 or 3 days, you spend more time talking, laughing, playing games, just spending time with family around that table than you do the rest of the year combined. Now, if your family's like mine growing up, your table is only recognizable as a table a couple times a year. See, most of us, we like to pretend that we have clean houses because that's what it is when people come over. But what they don't see is the hour before they get there. Because we like to pretend our table looks like this. Just perfect, pristine, beautiful. Like, we keep the fine china out every day just in case the queen comes over. But the reality is that your table looks like this. And trust me, there is a table under there. This is like a snapshot of my house growing up. And when I think about that table growing up, it is the epitome of what you would call multifunctional, right? I mean, it is used for everything. You have one corner that was for the rare occasion that we did our homework, right? And then over here, you had all the mail that my dad didn't want to open. And then next to it, you had all the recyclables. I know that we sound like hoarders, but we weren't, I promise. But this was just the layout of my dad. And then across the front of the table was our laundry. So you would have my clothes, my brother's clothes, my sister's clothes, my mom's clothes, my dad's underwear, all right there for the world to see. Except, that's my meme, I love it. Except for those 2 days a year. Those 2 days a year somehow the miracle takes place that your storage table becomes a dinner table. And I started thinking about that, and I thought, man, what all takes place to get it ready? For all of that to happen, what has to take place? And I thought of one main question. One main question that you have to ask when you look at the table and figure, what do I need to do to get this ready? And the question is, you have to ask, what belongs on the table? And I started thinking about the table. I started thinking about our lives, and they're both similar because the table is limited in space, right? And so is our life. Can we agree? We only have so much space in our life. We only have so much time. We only have so much energy. We only have so much money. We can only focus on so much at one time. And because of that, we have to be very cautious about what we put on our table. So we have to become more aware of the question, what belongs? This morning, I want to help you journey through that question as I've been doing. And we're going to begin doing so with a story in the Gospel of Luke. It's a story of two sisters named Mary and Martha. A lot of you are familiar with this story, and I'm glad you are. Because there's some lessons we can learn from both of these sisters. Jesus was well into his earthly ministry, traveling, teaching, just irritating people at every chance he got. And he comes to a town, and this is where we pick up in the story. In the Gospel of Luke, chapter 10, starting in verse 38, it says, "Now as they went on their way, Jesus entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. And she had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. But Martha was distracted with much serving. And she went up to him and said, 'Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her to help me.'" Now, we can all relate with Martha, right? We've all been in a position where we feel we're pulling more weight than we need to, that we're doing more work than anyone else around us. Moms, I'm going to praise and speak to you for a minute because I understand the battle. I understand that when you think about the holidays being 3 or 4 days away, you know this is a stress test, right? Because you know everyone is coming. You know your grandma's coming, your great-grandparents coming, your mother-in-law's coming, your crazy Aunt Sally who's going to check every piece of furniture for dust along with your Uncle Joe who won't stop farting at the table. Everyone is coming to your house. And as you're working and sweating and going crazy trying to prepare the house, you look at everyone and think, "Where's my help?" Because over here you have one child on Xbox with his headphones on who doesn't realize anyone else exists and he's not fighting in World War II. Over here you have a daughter who's nose deep into a book and thinks she's literally in Narnia. And then back here is your eldest child taking selfies and you don't know why. And all you think is, "I just want some help." But it's not just at home, we do this at work. A lot of you have those employees around you, those coworkers that you just, in your mind, they just don't pull their weight. "But I stay later, I travel more, I give up more vacation time, why don't I get the company car? Why don't they do their share?" You hate getting teamed up with someone because you know you're gonna have to do 80% while they walk through doing 20. For a lot of us, this goes into our relationships. Relationships with your parents, with your kids, maybe even with your spouse. You feel you pull all the weight. You're the one that always reaches out. You're the one that always picks up the phone. You're the one that always makes the plans. You're the one, you're the one, you're the one, you're the one. We can relate to Martha. Here Martha is whining to Jesus. I love this. It's literally like a whiny child. "Tell her to help me." And then the Father answers, "Martha, Martha." You know you're in trouble, right? It's like getting full named by your parents, right? He says, "Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken from her." See, I don't think as many of us relate to Mary. Yet this is the position, this is the attitude in which Jesus says is correct. So what does he mean? What is he trying to teach us through the mindset of Mary? When we talk about what's important, what belongs to the table, I think the first thing that we have to understand, that we have to learn, is that we have to look past the distractions. We have to begin to look past the distractions. See, a distraction is anything that prevents you from giving your full attention to something else. It's not specific about what it is. It's anything that keeps you from giving your full attention to something else. You see, we in the church, we often make the mistake that when we think of distractions, when we think of things that keep us from God, we immediately go to sin. And we think that sin is the only thing that can come between us and God. We have to change the way we think. Because I think for most, at least, especially mature Christians, the majority of the time, it's not sin. It says anything can distract you. Anything can prevent you from following God faithfully and fully. See, for Martha, it wasn't sin. It was distractions. So she was distracted by all the preparations that had to be done. About a month ago, I came face to face to what it means to be distracted. So we have a 4-year-old daughter named Bella Grace. She looks just like her mom, praise God. We have a 2-year-old son, almost two, who unfortunately looks just like his dad, bald and everything. And the sweetest kids, and they are so perfectly different. But for Bella, she has this condition that I think most of your kids probably suffer from too, that she'll be running around going crazy. I mean, she's climbing things, she's doing things, she's skipping around the house, she's dancing in her own fairy tale world. And then all of a sudden, she decides she needs something. And it's as if she all of a sudden loses all working ability of her legs. It doesn't matter where she's at in the house, all of a sudden, Mommy! Daddy! I need a snack! Help me turn on the lights! I need to go potty! And then once we realize she's not dying, and we go to help her, she's like, it's okay, I'll get it. Why didn't you just get it? Like, you know how to do these things. And knowing that that's how she is, about a month ago, I'd been out of town and I hadn't seen my kids a lot lately. And so I came home and just said, you know, I'm gonna do what I need to do. I'm going to just spend time with my kids. So Reagan was asleep. I was trying to let Christine relax and just decompress for multiple days with two crazy kids without me to help. And I said, okay, Bills, what do you want to do? We can do anything. She said, I want to watch a movie. I'm like, perfect. So she picks out a movie. We put it in, we sit down on the couch, we sit back, relax, got my arm around her, she's laying on my chest, and we're watching a movie that we've seen 1,000 times. Because, you know, it's never a new movie, it's always the same one. And we're sitting there watching the movie, and then all of a sudden, Mommy! Mommy! She's kind of surprised, I look at her, I say, Bells, what are you doing? I said, I am right here. Why are you yelling for Mom? 4 years old, she looked up at me. She said, because I didn't think you wanted to listen to me. I said, why? Why would you think that? I said, what in the world would make you think I don't want to listen to you? 4 years old. She said, because you're on your phone. Man, I thought for a minute, my heart breaking just piece by piece. 4 years old, she realized something I didn't. I was distracted. And I wish to God it was because of something important. But I wasn't checking work emails. I wasn't saving the world. I wasn't leading someone to Christ through social media. I was just distracted. I was focused on things that did not matter, and they stole my attention from what did matter. And my daughter, 4 years old, understood this. See, we always have stuff. Martha had a lot of stuff, but guess what? So did Mary. But Mary was able to look past the distractions. When we talk about focusing on what's important and learning to look past the distractions, you have to remember that busy is not always best. You see, because as a dad, as a husband, my first thought is, well, I can do this, I can paint this, I can build this, I can fix this, I can buy this. But what I've learned from my wife and what I've learned from my daughter and from Reagan, although he hasn't told me this, is it's not so much about what I do for them, it's what I do with them. They don't want more things. They want more me. And I never understood that until that moment, and it made sense. And then I think back to all the students we've worked with. We've been working with students full-time for almost 9 years. And I promise you, in all the counseling we've done, never once has a student looked at me and said, I wish my dad would have worked more so that we had more money. I wish my dad would have missed my games and taken that last trip so that we could go on vacation. Never have I heard that. But countless times I've heard, I wish we would have had more time together. I wish they would have come to more things. I wish we would have talked more. You think, Luke, my kid doesn't want to talk to me. Listen to me very carefully, parents. Yes, they do. They watch and they care. They want your attention. Even when they pretend they don't, they want your attention. Busy is not always best. It's very similar with our relationship with God. Yes, he's going to have things that he wants you to go do, tasks that need to be completed in your life, but he cares much less about what you do for him and more about what you do with him. This is why salvation is not works-based, because you can't do enough for God. It's not about going 100 miles an hour, doing 1,000 different things, trying to work your way into heaven. It's about choosing the one right thing and walking with him through everything he asks you to do. It's not about being busy. Busy is not best. And even with the best intentions in the world, being overwhelmed and too busy prevents us from having the relationship with God we're supposed to. Because distractions deter us from what's important. Distractions are the roadblock between us and what we're supposed to be focusing on. Busy is not best. And most of the time, it's not sin, church. As you mature as a believer, you're not always going to have this crippling addiction that prevents you from walking with God. And we'd see this with students all the time, and I know it's true with adults. Well, I get that, but I don't struggle with that. I don't struggle with addiction. I don't struggle with abuse. I don't struggle with adultery. I don't struggle with lust. I don't struggle with gossip or lies or stealing. No. But you have to admit, you are busy. And oftentimes, you're too busy for God. And you're too busy for your family. See, distraction is not always about sin. It's about anything that prevents us from giving our full attention to something else. See, my first instinct in moments like that, when Bella looked at me and said those words, is I need to remove these things. Right? It makes sense. I need to remove these things from my life. I'm going to remove all this stuff from my cell phone. When I get home, in fact, I'm just going to lock it away. Honestly, I just wanted to throw it away at that moment. But the more I started thinking about it, I realized it's not the thing that's the problem. That's the easy cop-out, is just to blame the thing. But it's not the things, it's your distraction. It's your inability to give the proper attention to what comes first. I urge you to consider that oftentimes it's about reorganization instead of removal. It's about reorganizing what is important in our lives instead of removing it. When it comes to things that are not sinful, it's not so much about removing them from our life. That was my first thought with this morning. So let's talk about clearing the table. It's easy. Confession, repentance, clear your life. And the more I sought God, the more I read this passage, the more I searched for him and searched for his truth, I realized it's not so much always sin. Sin's the obvious thing. It's the things that distract us. When you realize you only have so much time, so much space, you have to consider what needs to go away. Sometimes things do need to be removed. When I look at my table growing up, things needed to be removed. Recyclable goods, removed. Dad's underwear, removed. That's not supposed to be there when you eat dinner. But when I think about my table at home, it's not so much about what needs to be removed. It's about reorganizing what's there, making sure everything is where it's supposed to go. So when I think about this, when I think about reprioritizing, we all have to ask the same question of what comes first. Because you see, in life, it's not this perfect equation for everything. God comes first, family comes second. After that, it's different for everybody. It's about finding what rhythm in life works best for you. It's about finding what rhythm works best for your family. You can't look at my life and say, that's the rhythm I need. Your family's not mine. I can't look at yours and say, that's the rhythm I need, because I'm not you. I can learn things from you, but it's not a perfect equation that is universal. God first, family second. As far as everything else, it's what rhythm works in your life. But we have to all start with the basic question, what comes first? And for this, there is an equation. For this, there is an answer. Christ shows it to us in Matthew 6. Matthew 6, Jesus is in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount. And basically what he's doing here, it's the beginning of his earthly ministry, and he's looking at the standard of living that the religious leaders have taught. And he says, listen, this is where they tell you to live. This is where you need to live. He's elevating the standard of righteousness. He says, they say love your neighbor. I say love your enemy. They say eye for an eye, tooth for tooth. I say turn the other cheek. I say forgive endlessly. And then he comes to Matthew 6, and he talks about worry, anxiousness, concern. And he starts this point by just saying, therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life. And he begins to walk through things that we're anxious about. And what I love is he starts with the most basic things. He says, don't be anxious about food, about clothing, about water. And when he brings it to a close, he says this in verse 31, therefore do not be anxious saying, what shall we eat, what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the Gentiles, the sinners, seek after all those things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek first the kingdom of righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. He says, put the first things first. It's time to reorganize. Kingdom, righteousness, me. You have to remember that everything starts with Christ. I came across a quote the other day. It says, things that matter the most must never be at the mercy of things that matter the least. Things that matter the most must never be at the mercy of things that matter the least. In other words, my attention for my daughter must never be at the mercy of my phone. There is nothing so important that my daughter should think I don't want to talk to her. Our relationship with God, the priority of Him in our life, must never be at the mercy of anything else. There is no job worth exceeding in. There is no relationship out of heaven worth having that should place God at its mercy. First things first. When we talk about reorganizing our life, when we talk about what belongs, we have to start at the bottom. You have to start at the bottom. We start this morning by talking about holidays. I love traditions and holidays. And one of the traditions I grew up doing is that we grew up doing puzzles over the holidays. Every year, we'd go to our mom and papa's house and we would do puzzles. Every year, we'd arrive, papa would go out to the garage. He'd pull out the card table. We all remember these? Some of you were like, that's my desk at home. I know, I've been there. Pull out the card table. Get it set up right by the fire so we were warm, although it's Texas and it's 90 degrees outside. And there's earthquakes going on, apparently. He'd go get the ugly, beat-up, old, just horribly uncomfortable metal chairs. Now, these chairs were important because these depicted whether or not we were going to do the puzzle, because we didn't want the metal chair. We wanted the rocking chair that was there. And then he'd go back to the closet at the end of the hallway on the left, pull out a puzzle. And it was always something like this, where it's like 1,000 pieces and 900 of them are blue. He'd open up the puzzle, dump it on the table. It's like, all right, kids, have fun. Because this is what we did, right? They didn't have game systems at their house. They didn't have cable most of the time. If it was nice, we were outside. If it wasn't, we were in front of the fire doing a puzzle. This is what we would do, and I love doing them. And I still love watching my kids do them because it's the most entertaining thing in the world, right? Because when you watch a child, especially do a puzzle, it's like equal parts frustration and enjoyment, right? Because we always help them, and so you always start, how do you start doing a puzzle? That's right, you do the corners, then you do the edges, then you work your way in. If you don't, that's why you are horrible at puzzles, okay? You're free to be wrong, but you're wrong. And so we do the outside edges, and we start filling it in. And it's so fun to watch kids because they find two of the 900 blue pieces, right? And think, these two belong together. And they start trying to piece them together and force them together. And then all of a sudden you hear the banging. I'm done. You go over and say, that doesn't fit. Did you cut that? How? The foot doesn't go there. But then I started thinking like that. That's life, right? We sit down, we're going 100 miles an hour, have 1,000 pieces in front of us, and it's all about getting the right thing where it's supposed to go. It's all about finding the right pieces to go together, and then we put this here and this here. Well, that doesn't really fit, so we put it here, and we're going around trying not to freak out and be over-frustrated, and then all of a sudden we find that one piece. Just that one piece, it looks different. It looks unique and special. We think, this is God. Like I remember as a kid, like I would find that one piece and I would hold on to that piece. I'm going to make sure I am the one that puts that piece there, right? And we hold on to that piece tightly and dearly because we know the puzzle cannot be completed without that piece. It's the important one. This is God. I thought more about that. I'm trying to wrap my mind around it, and it's just not adding up. 2 + 2 looks like 5. It doesn't make sense. And I start to think back to the story of Martha and Mary. And as Martha was distracted, she had her priorities wrong. Jesus told her, only one thing is needed. I thought, one thing is needed. One thing is needed. This doesn't make sense. Because I got the one thing, and I know the puzzle can't be completed without this one thing. But it can't be completed without that either. Or without that, or without that, or that piece there. I started thinking, if God is a piece of my puzzle, then he's equally important as everything else. I said, that doesn't make sense. Because God said one thing is needed. I couldn't figure it out, and all of a sudden, it clicked. All of a sudden, I saw my mistake. See, God's not another piece of your puzzle in which you have to find its proper place. He's the foundation on which your puzzle is put together. He's the table. And I saw it clear as day, right? Because think about it. When you talk about priorities, you have to start at the bottom. Fixing priorities always begins with the foundation. Because think about it. Without the foundation, you have nothing. When you think about a puzzle and you think about putting the pieces together, no matter how perfectly, no matter how accurately, precisely you work, when you put them together and there is no table, there's nothing to hold it up. It doesn't matter what the piece is. It doesn't matter if it's in the right place. Without the table for foundation, without the support of something greater than the pieces, they fall apart. A lot of us, we look at our life thinking, man, I can't figure out why nothing comes together. Where's your table? Where's your table? But here's the beauty of God. It doesn't matter if this is how you look. It doesn't matter how far and how many pieces are scattered in your life. All you need is the table. And God promises the table. He says, seek and you will find. Ask and it will be given to you. Come to me and I will be your rock. I will be your foundation on which everything will be built. And when we surrender that to God and when we ask him to become the foundation of our life, God gets down. He starts to help us pick up all the pieces. And it's not fast, it's a slow process. See, we want to think that life becomes perfect tomorrow, but the reality is it takes some time because we've made a mess. But it's not the depression of the mess, it's the hope of the table. Because with the foundation set, the puzzle can be completed. The pieces can be placed where they're supposed to go. That's what God promises. He says, seek first the kingdom and righteousness and all else will be added to you. Seek and you will find, ask and you will knock. You say, Luke, that sounds like prosperity gospel. No, that's the promise of the gospel. The promise of the gospel to give you everything you lack that you cannot do on your own. Because God is not hopeless, He is hope. Your life is not empty without purpose. He is the purpose. But no matter what you do or how you do it, without the table that can sustain itself, nothing else will come into place. It's about putting the first things first. It's about prioritizing your life. It's about asking yourself, what's my focus? Not what do I want it to be? I think that's obvious. But what is your focus? Where is your time, energy, and money going into? What covers your tabletop? And then asking what needs to happen to fix it. Church, this morning, what needs to happen is simple. Praise. Putting God in the proper place in your life. Exalting His name above all else. Looking to Him for every need, every concern that you have, everywhere you lack, every failure you've made. Looking to Him for hope. Exalting His name first. It's not about working faster. It's not about doing more. It's about doing the right thing and placing God in the exalted position of your life. It's about praising Him and putting Him first. Church, I urge you to stand with us this morning to exalt the name of God, to put Him in His proper place, and watch Him work.